590 The Fan.
Sunday morning show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Let's get back into those Toronto Blue Jays who just seem to be on a red hot streak, but now there's a little bit of complications with the pitching situation and Danny Jansen getting back in the injury. The bumps and bruises that guy has had seems very unlucky. Let's talk to Shai Davidi about it. This insider that's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Shai Davidi, senior MLB columnist at Sportsnet. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, we're doing well. The Jays have been a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions with great pitching and then injuries and then Danny Jansen seemingly a little bit cursed. Let's just start with the Ryu situation. So it seems like there's some chronic changes to the elbow. It's not a great thing to read this early in the morning. What does that mean to you, and what is kind of the outlook for him moving forward?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard that description before. It doesn't sound particularly promising. I thought it was interesting that Ross Atkins was trying to, or at least suggested that there's a possibility that this isn't necessarily something terribly significant, but clearly they're trying to get a better understanding of what's happening in there. And so, yeah, I mean, the whole process, there have been a lot of red flag words, you know, for the Blue Jays. You know, the first thing is just trying to figure out how long potentially this is and how severe it is, because at that point they it's going to affect their plans in a pretty significant way, one way or the other. So, you know, hopefully for Ryu's sake, it's not too severe. And, you know, another guy who's had a lot of injuries over the course of his career and been through a lot. So you think about his health and his well-being first and foremost. But, you know, the Blue Jays definitely have some very significant questions, or there's some very significant spin-offs depending on what the final diagnosis is with him.
Well, regardless of the spin-off, Shai, do you think that this is a team now that's going to need to add starting pitching depth? Because Thomas Hatch seems like he's too close to the starting rotation now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wrote about this last week when, you know, the first diagnosis on Ryu was revealed. Yeah, there's not a clear six. And I would say this, there's still some runway because, you know, if you went into or going back to spring training, you're looking who is the number seven on this team. It was pretty clear, you know, Nate Pearson, and you felt pretty good about that. But obviously Nate Pearson has had another star-crossed start to his season. And is he going to get back to where he needs to be? Can he build up? Can he be trusted? You know, those are some significant questions right now, but there's a little bit of runway between now and the August 2nd trade deadline for that to play out. I think the concern is that if, you know, something else happens to someone in the rotation, well, now Thomas Hatch is in there, and, you know, then you're kind of staring down the barrel potentially of, you know, Casey Lawrence or Bowden Francis or something else that you don't feel terribly good about. So, you know, I think one way or the other, they're going to have to get some layer of depth at minimum for the starting rotation, but depending on what happens with Ryu and how things go for Stripling, then, you know, maybe it's something they have to address in a more meaningful way too.
Yeah. I always say that Stripling, this happens over and over and over again, where he shows up in this role and you appreciate what you have in him. But I still think that ideally you have him as your long man in the pen who can swing into one of these roles. It kind of brings up the perpetual question with this guy, and it's almost annoying because I doubt you have an even better feel for his timelines or anything along it, but Nate Pearson is just that name that keeps percolating. When this happens, you got to check in on what's up with Nate. And I mean, if you have a timeline update or a feel as to when we're going to see him back in the big leagues, That's great, but my more pertinent question is, what do you think his stint in Buffalo is going to look like? Like, how long are they going to run him down there? And do you think the plan is still, we want him to be a starter?
The hope remains that he can become a starter, but the trajectory to that, or the, you know, the odds or the likelihood of that, continue to decrease because he's just not pitching enough, right? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's cut off and that he can't, you know, at least start his career in some sort of hybrid role. You know, you think about the way the Rays used, say, a Luis Patino last year, in a number of different ways, extending him at times, shorter stints at times. You know, maybe that's what Nate Pearson is, at least this season. But, you know, first and foremost, he has to throw the ball the way that he can. And until he's, you know, throwing the ball with the type of authority and the type of power that he can and has shown, you know, then the rest of the conversation is sort of moot. So, you know, how he performs at Buffalo is going to drive some of this timeline and drive some of this thinking and the discussion around rules. But I think first and foremost, the Blue Jays desperately need to get him pitching the way he can. And then that really opens up all the other conversations. In a lot of ways, all the other chatter is sort of premature right now because everything revolves around getting him right.
Yeah, I just can't help myself, and I keep falling down the same honeypot where I'm like, yeah, maybe Nate Pearson. Let me know what's going on with Nate Pearson. The guy that actually is closer, the guy that actually we could be projecting out of all these injuries, isn't Nate Pearson. Like, I shouldn't be starting with him. It's Gabriel Moreno, and yeah, the OPS down in the minors is not. It's not insane, right? I think it's around 800. I was looking at it this morning, which is good. Like, he's hitting well, but it's not one of those, like, oh my God, this is undeniable. What is he even doing in the minors right now? Where do you think the organization's at with him, given Danny Jansen's latest injury? I heard yesterday that they only think it's going to be like 3 weeks for Danny, but or at least that could be the most optimistic timeline. But do you think that the organization wants to take a look at Gabriel Moreno?
So, everybody wants to look at Moreno. I think the challenge is, what is the right thing for him and what is the right thing for the team? And there are a couple ways to kind of consider it. And, you know, I think what they've done is they brought up Zach Collins. They bought themselves some time. You know, they've got the off day tomorrow before they go to Detroit. So they've got a bit of a window in which to consider this a little bit more fully. And here are the questions. So if the Jansen injury is going to be shorter term, is it worth bringing him up for a couple weeks, exposing him, maybe overexposing him potentially, and then sending him back down once Jansen returns? Or do you just ride it out with Collins and lean a little bit heavier on Kirk than you might otherwise? Versus, is there a benefit to Moreno for having that exposure and then being able to take that down to Buffalo, even if he potentially struggles and he has to sit on that struggle a little bit once he gets back down there? You know, I think those are the types of conversations that they're going to be having, because, you know, I still feel like offensively he's going to be fine. You know, like, you know, the OPS, he hasn't hit for, the reason the OPS is there is because he hasn't hit for a ton of power. Or at least not a lot of home runs, but there's no doubt that bat's going to transition and is probably ready to transition. Question is, can he handle a pitching staff? And when I was down in Buffalo in April talking to people, you know, a lot of the conversations were around, you know, getting him comfortable with game calling, getting him comfortable with reading in-game situations, and perhaps most pivotally, getting him comfortable talking to pitchers who are, you know, 5-10 years older than him with a ton more experience, and saying, no, this is how we're going to attack people. And, you know, now imagine doing that at the big league level with some guys who are all stars and, you know, major stars. And also in the midst of the pennant race where, you know, every pitch really matters because this team has an opportunity this year. You know, that might be a lot to put on him in a short while. So you know, I think if he comes up here, the Blue Jays are going to want him to play in probably 50% of the team games, whether that's all behind the plate or behind the plate and at DH. And so are you comfortable with him carrying that type of load in a pennant race with all the pressures inherent, with a veteran-laden pitching staff? You know, is that a good spot to put him in? And if the answer is yes, then no, then I think we see him. And if they feel like, no, he still needs a little bit more time, this maybe it's not his window, then they stick with Collins.
Well, do you think, like, how interested do you think the organization is in them with three catchers? Because I would argue to them, like, hey, guys, isn't this the perfect situation where you have Danny Jansen hanging around? You have a guy that literally isn't doing anything other than, like, you can actually consult with. You have Alejandro Kirk, who can take the vast majority of the catching load. You can have Zach Collins that's there as an option for you. And you can essentially assign Gabriel Moreno to a pitcher to start. Like, you can have him catch, like, somebody like a Ross Stripling to start his career, while being able to bounce it off of two other more experienced seasoned catchers and not have to really just take on a role of, wow, you're automatically like splitting the games with somebody. Like, to me, if we're ever talking about a way of transitioning someone to be like a catcher, like for the defensive parts of the game, the things that you're discussing, it would almost seem like to me on paper, this is kind of like a gift from God.
I mean, then you're tying up a roster spot on Zach Collins to do essentially nothing, right? Or for Moreno.
Well, he would still catch some games, I'm saying, in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an optimal roster configuration. And, you know, if you could drop a reliever, great. But especially now that you don't have, you know, someone like Ross Stripling in the bullpen, I just think that's a tighter, a more difficult roster construct, and you know, you don't want to necessarily drop a reliever at this point for a position player, or you don't feel confident in it, because you know Ross Stripling gave them five, but is he going to be able to give them five consistently? And then you basically can't have anyone in your rotation have a blip. So yeah. You know, I in theory it does make some sense. There are obviously a lot of pluses to it, but it's not a great way to have your roster set up. And, you know, there are just too many competing interests to make that happen. I think if he comes here, you have to have the confidence in him to play. And, you know, just to have him hang around and play one game a week, you know, that's not necessarily helping him too. You know, it's like, it's sort of like grad school versus internship, right? You know, you actually want him doing stuff. You don't just want him sitting in class.
Hey, listen, I think that's a really well-put point. So, speaking of the catchers, Shai, what do you think Kirk actually is? Like, what do you think we're actually seeing here? Because I'm almost watching these games, and when guys get him out, I go, wow, good for you. Like, that's how tough of an out he is right now.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, he's legitimately been one of the more productive hitters in the American League, one of the toughest outs in the American League. And this, maybe not to this extent, but in terms of the spectrum of possibilities for him, like, the bat was always this legit, right? I think the question with him is around durability, you know, especially now with Danny Jansen out. You know, like, the Blue Jays were, you know, when the Jays had Kirk and Jansen before Jansen got hurt, and they're sort of in this dream scenario where they could really optimize the two of them. And, you know, whoever you're starting, you're not facing a major drop-off. And then, you know, if you're looking for a little bit of offense, you could plop the guy who isn't playing into the DH role and, you know, cross your fingers that there's no injury. But, you know, you're in a pretty good situation. And, you know, now what does it look like for Kirk if he's catching 5 days a week and, you know, maybe DHing once or something along those lines? You know, there's some of the defensive performance that he's had this year, and he's been very, very good pitch framing. You know, one of the reasons he's paired with Alec Manoah is because he's so good in the lower parts of the zone at framing that, you know, he's really helping Manoah get pitches that he might otherwise miss. You know, like, does that start breaking down a little bit? Is he a little bit less fresh late in games? You know, that was part of the concern at points last year and even in 2020 when he first came up, was that, you know, latter parts in games, you saw some of his mobility decrease. You know, will that happen if he's having to take on a more regular load? That I think is what was part of what the Blue Jays will be considering within that Moreno discussion as well. Mm-hmm. How do you continue to get the best out of Alejandro Kirk? But what he's shown them, this level of performance, is definitely within the spectrum of possibility for him, given the tools and the ability. He's always been just a remarkable hitter. And, you know, he's showing it right now. He's able to leverage some of the experience that he's gained. And he's just having an unbelievable year so far.
Yeah, I guess what shifted for me a little bit is that I looked at this guy as an unbelievable hitter for a catching prospect, right? As a catcher. And now I'm looking at him just as, oh my God, he's just an unbelievable hitter. Like the way he gets the bat through the zone, his ability to make contact, the strike zone, all of it, his eye, just, he's spectacular. And I do wonder what the Blue Jays thinking is going to be here if they do have those concerns about work rate and load management with a guy like him. Because, yeah, the concern has always been how the body's going to hold up. And I don't really know, honestly. Like, I've seen people with that take, and I'm not, like, I understand his body type is different, but I don't really know how that applies to, like, longevity throughout his career. But I would think that if the Jays High Performance Center thinks, like, hey, we're worried about him wearing down, like, you can't really afford to lose that bat. And so, yeah, if that means less games catching, like, I think that, like, weirdly, that has to be the priority, no? Like, that the bat is the priority now.
Well, if he played a different position, sure, right? But the catching role is so important these days.
Like, right.
You can't just give that up. Like, that's not just a secondary piece to all this. And so, yeah, you've got to find ways to keep the bat healthy, to keep the bat in the lineup and keep the bat productive. I don't disagree with that notion at all. But, you know, you can't punt on the defensive piece because you need that, right? Because if you're not, like, let's say right now the Jansen's out, right? You know, if you're having to play Collins a lot just to keep Kirk's bat in the lineup, you know, that's not necessarily helping you because, you know, unless Collins is going to get hot the way that he did in early April, you're definitely giving up a fair bit on defense and potentially giving up a fair bit of offense as well. So, you know, how the Blue Jays approach this is going to be super intriguing because one way or the other in the coming weeks, while Jansen's out, Kirk's going to have to play more. There's no doubt. And that's not a bad thing. The question is, does that have a cost at some point for him this season? And then the other thing to remember is that, you know, he's probably not going to hit like 360 all year. You know, he's in the midst of probably or potentially at least his best month of the year. You know, as you get to more of a baseline, you know, like how do you get him to maintain that baseline? And what does it look like once he's at that baseline?
How dare you insinuate that he's not Barry Bonds? How dare you? That's just upsetting to me. That's actually what I was asking you. That first question, though, is what are we looking at here? Because you're right. This is probably his hottest month, and I've been saying that to myself to keep my expectations lower. I just it's one of those process and results thing where it's matching up for me in a way where I'm going, well, yeah, it's not going to be this. But, like, how much worse is it going to be? Like, I really do think that, like, is it him being, like, a 900-ish OPS guy? Like the way he gets on base. Like, it's just his on-base percentage. Like, what is that going to finish at? I was like, this guy's, like, Chubby Ichiro all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's tough to strike out. Like, he's tenacious. He's got a good idea of the zone. Especially in the last, you know, month and a bit, you know, you've really seen him kind of lock in on his zone as well and be a little bit more tenacious and selective in what he's swinging at. And he's found a way to start driving the ball because, you know, he's going up there with better plans. Like, there's no doubt we're seeing something pretty special. But, yeah, you know, I think we also have to, you know, I don't think a 300 batting average is an unreasonable expectation.
No,
I don't think
no.
uh, you know, an OPS, an OVP creeping towards 400 is unreasonable. The other stuff, though, like, you know, is he gonna continue to mash, you know, extra bases at this pace? Is he going to do all those other things at this pace? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. And then, again, what happens if, you know, the workload gets to a point that it starts causing some ripple effects there?
Yeah. I hope it doesn't. I hope we just see this. But, yeah, that was exactly my thought yesterday was I think we're looking at a 300 hitter here. Like, that's a reasonable expectation for him this season, at least something around it. Shai Davidi, thanks as always for making time for us today, pal. We appreciate it.
No problem. Take care, guys, and feel better, JD.
Thanks, man. Shai Davidi, senior MLB columnist for Sportsnet. And this Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. And, yeah, Kirk is just becoming one of these guys where, like, Shai is, again, he's a senior columnist. He's an insider with this company. So he understands better than very few people that they clearly are monitoring Alejandro Kirk's workload, that they are going to be very cautious with him because he's an incredibly important piece. I don't ever want to sound like I'm diminishing what it means to be a catcher and hit, because it's outrageous. But if he is a 300 hitter in this lineup, in a lineup, again, that has lacked some on-base ability at times, I really wonder what the internal conversations are going to be like in terms of valuing his ability to catch, how often they're going to be wanting and willing to lean on that versus just having the bat in the lineup. We've already seen him DHing a lot. Like, we've seen him catch a lot more than I would have obviously expected him to, given Danny Jansen's injuries. But that's why, again, I really think that they should do the Mourinho thing. I agree with what Shai says about, like, I don't agree with the idea of overexposure in the sense of a guy comes up, he can't hit, and he gets afraid and he goes down. I do believe in feeling a little overwhelmed, let's say, by coming up and having to learn an entire pitching staff. But to me, I would lean on the luxury of the three-catcher thing. I would be saying, yep, we want Kirk to catch. But if we're talking about ideal roster spots, well, that's just the nature of being hurt. Like, having injuries is that you don't have ideal roster spots. This is a team that carried Vinny Capra and didn't play him for, like, weeks. So I don't think that having Mourinho sit a couple of extra days and not be playing every day in the minors is the worst thing. Have him learn the staff now, because now you do have the luxury. What happens if you end up losing Danny Jansen to a material injury or Kirk to a material injury? Then you're going to have to bring up Mourinho. And then what? Then you're under the gun later in the season having him try to learn these things with the staff? I'm saying learn it now. Why not now? No time like the present. Have him come up. Have him catch a couple times a week. Have him focus on one, maybe two pitchers. Develop the relationship a bit. Learn from Danny Jansen. Sit there in the film room with Danny Jansen. Sit there and go over the iPad with him. Get acclimated with what it's like in the big leagues. There's never going to be a lower pressure time for Gabriel Mourinho to learn this position. So I say,
and
absolutely,
he did a little
now.
Bit of this in the spring as well. Like, they gave him a little bit of a dry run to come up to see what a major league experience would be like. He went in the pregame meetings. He learned how to do the scouting reports. So it's not completely foreign to him. They did that little bit of a buffer at the beginning of the season to see, you know, how he would fit. So maybe now is the time with the buffer and the comfort to come up and to get the best of both worlds. So we'll see. I wonder what Blake's thoughts are on this. We're going to talk to him next in the Wake and Rake, actually, which is brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of actors.
Show me the money!
With J.D., Blake, and Ailish.
Wake up, you piece of shit!
Time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. And we're actually joined by a little special guest today for our betting segment. See if you can help us right the ship. It's Tim McAuliffe, host of Tim and Friends. Good morning.
Good morning, Ailish. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing well. JD's actually...
You're doing better than JD.
Yeah, as I say, you're going to hear his voice soon, and it's going to scare you. Somebody thought it was maybe the Silence of the Lambs guy, you know, the creepy little voice. But yeah, we're holding in there. We're holding in there. There's a lot of sports.
There's a reason
tonight,
why
though.
I asked how you're doing, though, Ailish, because I know how JD's doing.
Yeah, have you heard? You were peeking. You heard him. Yeah, he's struggling, but soon we're done. We actually get that extra hour now that Kipper and Bourne take the 9 o'clock slot, so he can go rest up with the lozenges. So you know the deal with the betting segment brought to you by Unibet. We're all fancy now with our sponsor. You know, people listen to us. We've been bringing in the dough for our listeners, so we got a sponsor. Where do you guys want to start? Jays, you want to start NBA Finals?
Well, I want to ask Tim about Canada soccer first, because show, Tim, has been, like, you've been on top of this better than anybody. You were the first guy that brought it to my attention. Your show has been must-watch, covering this story. They're going to play, right? They're going to play this game, and the way that it was explained is that this one actually kind of matters, so they're going to actually put this in. Like, this is a real FIFA obligation. But, man, I guess just where are you at in terms of what happens next here, because I feel like some people have just kind of wanted to ignore this story and do the ostrich move because they just love this team, they love this program, and this coming at this time is just like, it's unsettling.
Yeah, I think it's almost though a necessary evil I hate the momentum. Like, I'm with you. I think the ostrich is a self-defense mechanism for a lot of people, especially the hardcores that have been around and seeing kind of why nobody was really, like, the hardcores were almost reluctant to jump back on the bandwagon because they've been hurt so many times by Canada soccer. It's similar to Canada basketball, to be honest with you, JD, the idea where every time you get close, they find a new way to squash your fandom. And at this point, the CSA, the Canadian Soccer Association, is attempting to grow as quickly as the program has. And to be honest with you, like, I don't think a lot of people understand this. Like, this isn't Hockey Canada. This is the Canadian Soccer Association. It could fit into your studio. Like, all of the employees of Canada Soccer could probably fit into your studio. Like, it's a small entity that hasn't really had to deal with any of this before. And now they're, like, struggling to keep up with the pace of what I don't think even they saw coming, and almost a necessary evil to go through something like this if they want to compete at the highest levels. Like, it was a slap in the face to everybody. And I am hoping that everyone looks at it and goes, okay, now we know what we have to do. And now we know where we have to be. But to compare, and I know the players are doing this, and I have the utmost respect and always lean towards the players, especially when it comes to FIFA, because the executives in FIFA have entrusted absolutely no trust in themselves. So, but the players have to understand too, that this isn't like the United States Soccer Federation. Like, this is the first World Cup. This is the first time they've ever been anywhere near anything like this. And there's got to be some patience to go along with what is kind of theirs. But I think fans outside of Canada, or fans in Canada, have to understand outside of Canada, this happens a lot. Like, it happens in a lot of different federations. Are those federations top notch? No. And was Canada soccer top notch? No. But hopefully people will see the money here, and wherever there's money, usually smart people follow because they want a piece of that money. And hopefully those smart people can figure out a way to get this kind of smoothed out so that we don't have to deal with this again. But the crazy part is the outpouring of public support for the players. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that. And I think that has to, I think that's a, like a good wake up call for Canada soccer and the Canadian soccer or Canada soccer business, which is the business arm of the CSA.
So one, I love that part of the answer is just simply, hey guys, like, you got to realize this is soccer we're talking about here. Okay. Like there's going to be problems when we talk about the money. It's like, we get used to this. So it's like, okay, cool. So let's have it under the bar of soccer. Two is you're right. I think that it is very exciting that people love this team so much that the support for the players was like basically unanimous when you saw it on social media. And I think that you're right when you say that generally the rule of thumb in these types of negotiations is to side more with the players. But I do think that the point you raised there is an important one where, okay, like I get it. World-class countries are used to having things like the accommodations and the tickets lined up. But for those to be things that are even raised at this point, I got to tell you, it irks me. Like, we're not the Netherlands. We're not Brazil. Like, there shouldn't be these protocols that are already in place for everything. Like, like you said, we're not a world-class soccer nation. And so finding a deal that's equitable for everyone should be important here. But I was a little bothered by some of the handling of this and some of the output of this by the players. And I know that some of this is the CSA's spin backwards and that it's never great when you take, you know, the guys who are the product and you make them out to be villainous or greedy. Like, that's always bad business. But yeah, I do think there has to be at least some accountability on the players' parts here. As much as we love these guys, to say, guys, like, It was 1986 when this program made it to the World Cup last and they scored no goals. Okay? Yeah. Like, it might take a second here for us to build up a program that gets you all the World Cup tickets that you want for day one of the event. Like, can we have a second? Can we have a second?
Yeah. And the other part of this, and this is just for the audience, that like the Canadian soccer business is this shadowy arm that people are worried about, but they're also building a pro league. And I know that you guys understand from your hockey background and your basketball background, like the CEBL is important for Canada basketball. A Canadian Premier League in soccer is important for soccer. A women's pro league in Canada is important for the growth of the national game. But to put that on the players is like almost unfair, right?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Are you guys going to help pay for this? What? Like, why would we help pay? Well, this is the future of the game in our country, and it's not exactly like we have a bunch of domestic pro leagues like every other country in the world. And so there's like that balance of like, how much do they pay for this, even though we as fans know that a domestic pro league will probably really help the program in the long term.
100%. And I totally get their position and they shouldn't have to bear all of the brunt. And there should be, because again, this is soccer. It's not Canada hockey, as you mentioned, where the idea that you would have to pay, you know, Sidney Crosby to go play for Team Canada at an international event is insane. Like these guys, I've said, they could put these events on the moon for the hockey players and they would want to go represent Canada. But this isn't that same program. It isn't that same sport. So there's a lot of recalibration that needs to be done for all of us as fans. I just think that there has to be some of that for these soccer players. There has to be some of like what you are doing here is this is not a club team. It is Canada soccer. Like the domestic league should matter a little to you. Growth of the game should matter somewhat to you. Like this can't be completely discounted. The reason why those fans were so ravenous is because you're wrapped in the flag. Like, don't forget that. Like, that's a big part of this. Anyway, I think you guys have done a really, really, really great job covering the story. And yeah, I listen every day because I'm just like, I'm basically all of my information has come from you and Brent. Like, it's like that's I formulated my opinion based on purely you and Brent and the reporting and the discussion that you guys have had around this. So again, we're talking to Tim McAuliffe. This is the Wake and Rake presented by Unibet. So yeah, we will make our best bets today. And with that, We'll talk about this NBA Finals. Do you have a lean tonight in terms of where you're looking for Game 3, Warriors and Celtics? Celtics are -4.5 favorites tonight. But like, do you think the Celtics are the better team?
So that's a wonderful question, and it's why I'm leaning towards Warriors money line. I feel this is a better team game tonight. Like, whoever is the better team will win. And I think the adjustments that the Warriors made in game two paid some dividends. I also think that the wake-up call that Draymond Green gave the team is the wake-up call that they needed. And listen, Boston, like, since January, Boston is among, if not the best team in the NBA, and so are the Warriors. And what I think the difference is, and it's funny, we had Matt Bonner on the show, and Matt worked with Ime Udoka in San Antonio, and had some real insight on how he thought the Boston Celtics were going to stop the Golden State Warriors. Because the way I broke this down was, these are two of the best defensive teams in the league, even if you don't know it, and Boston's probably better. But I think offensively the Warriors are better than Boston. And Bonner disagreed with me. He flat out disagreed with me. He thought that Boston offensively was just as good as the Warriors. What I thought that we saw in game two was the Warriors figure out a way to kind of free up their offense a little bit and then play with the passion that they need. And that's why I think this is like best team wins tonight, because you know how important the game three is. And I'll take a little bit of the money on the road and take a little money line Warriors dip here.
I definitely like the value of the Warriors at plus 133 in this game. And I think that I agree with some of what you said. I disagree with some of what you said. I'm not sure who's the better. I will say I'm splitting the middle of you and Bonner. I'm not sure who the better offensive team is. But I know this. I like way more players on the Celtics. And if Klay continues to look like the version that we've seen the first two games, or if Poole looks like the version that we've seen in the first two games, I don't know if Steph is going to be able to go on the road, or what a Steph Curry game where he goes on the road and beats that Celtics defense is going to look like. I think the Warriors split on the road. So if you think tonight is the night, bet the 133, or just bet both nights the Warriors. I think you're going to get a split here. Like, I think that we're going back to Golden State with this thing knotted up. I really do want to see how Curry lasts throughout this series, because the one surprising thing for me anyways through the first two games is how much the Warriors are leaning on him offensively. Like, yeah. I talked about this with Sirit Sohi, but Sirit and I were saying, like, somebody else is going to have to step up in a major way. And you're either going to need a vintage Klay Thompson performance, and he doesn't look very good. You're going to need Jordan Poole to either pour in, like, a 25-point game, and Steve Kerr is pretty reluctant to play him. Or, you know, going back to Canada basketball, is this the Andrew Wiggins moment, Tim McAuliffe? Like, are we going to see, is this going to be the Andrew Wiggins game? Because he was brilliant in the series against Dallas, and it really does feel like they're going to need to lean on him for at least one of these games where he's going to have to show up. Like, if they're going to get a split against Boston, I would say that it is as realistic that you get a monster Wiggins game as it is you get one from Klay or Poole.
But that's why I think they're better offensively, is because you have three guys that can go off for a monster game alongside Curry. Now, we saw in game one, the Celtics get three guys that don't normally contribute more. And they won with Jason Tatum going 3 of 17 from the floor. And it's funny because I don't know if Klay Thompson has another 4 for 19 game in him, and they won, right? Yeah. So for me, it's almost like, okay, we get back to normal basketball for these guys, and who's better? And I'm completely discounting how good defensively both of these teams are to do that to each other, to get a 3 for 17 out of Tatum, or to get a 4 for 19 in game two out of Klay Thompson. So that's where I'm kind of leaning. Like, I think that there are more opportunities for someone else to help carry the water on the Warriors, and that's kind of why I'm leaning that way. But I listen, like, if you were to ask me, like, five units, me being strongest and I'm going to do this versus where I'm at on this, like, I think I'm around a 3 unit. Like, it's not, I'm not saying I'm going to hammer down on this because I love it. I'm going to say I'm getting value here, so this is a halfway sprinkle.
No, but I think that's a smart way of looking at it, is if you think the Warriors are the better team and you think the Warriors are going to split, then why not take them at plus money here, at plus 133?
Right.
I think that that is the way. I think that the only way that you're betting Boston tonight, frankly, is you're taking them on the spread. Like, I don't think that there's a money line play here. You either really believe that, hey, Boston is deeper, that defense is great, they're going to deploy the right players, and they're not going to turn the ball over. Because Ailish brought this up earlier, but what's the number, Ailish? 15? When the Celtics are over 15, they lose?
No, if they 15 or less turnovers, they're like 13-2 record. And if they get 16 or more turnovers, it's like 0-6.
Yeah, they lose. That's the magic number for the Celtics. So just we'll know early. Hey, you know
you'll
what?
Know maybe if they're at 15 turnovers, you'll know where to bet.
Well, I was going to say, actually, in-game. You can monitor this early, the in-game betting, as if they're turning the ball over a lot earlier. You're like, hey, listen, they're probably going to hit the over on 16. Let's bet this sucker. Let's take this. Yeah, I don't really love – I got to tell you, I don't really love any props in this game. There isn't something that really sticks out to me. I think this is a watch-and-see game. Like, that's it for me. Is I'm with Tim in the sense of I think the value is on the Warriors here. I think that maybe a little sprinkle on the under. It looks just a little high to me. Like, I do the eye test thing of when I first look at a line, what's my, like, gut feel? Mm-hmm. And I thought this game was going to come in around, like, maybe, like, 206, 207 points. And you're getting a couple of more. So I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe a little light dash on the under. Let's see if the Warriors players can translate on the road. A little home cooking for the Celtics. But, yeah, that's the way that I feel about it. Okay, so you make a best bet on this show, Tim. So, you know, the three-unit bet or whatever, this, I mean, it's still a pretty heavy bet for a dog, but it's, are we to assume that the Warriors then
not
are
not?
Not
a dog.
He's making that TV money, baby.
It's 4 points. Yeah. It's not a dog. This is a, like, Vegas has said that these two teams are even. That's probably 3 points, maybe 4 points at home, right? Like, that's the way Vegas would look at it. If we call it coin flip, you get 4 points at home.
God, so it's so refreshing. It really is refreshing seeing a finals like this, though, no? Where it's like, I really don't know who's going to win these games. And I really am invested emotionally in both teams. And both teams have history. And both teams have, like, iconic players and guys who could be iconic players. It's just really, really great series. I love this. I can't wait for tonight.
Yeah.
But we are to assume that this is not your best bet.
We are to assume this is not. Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Probably. I'm watching the Jays game too.
Okay,
let's go there now. Jays game, and so I'm just gonna keep riding. And I know you say Kikuchi has been a bit of a roller coaster, if we're going best bet, I'm taking the Jays for the sweep because I think they felt like they gave away a couple of games against Minnesota, and they need to, as the boys in the hood used to say, finish here and take this sweep and go.
Well, you know what's good for your bet here is that, do you know how many runs the Royals have over the last two games? Everybody paid attention?
Yeah.
Zero. The Royals, they got to score a lot more runs to beat the Toronto Blue Jays. So Kikuchi, it's like, hey, man, just don't give up a million. But this is a kind of a pretty low bar. That offense stinks. Mm-hmm. Like, they showed Sal Perez's numbers, and I go, wow, that's quite the drop-off for them. Benintendi's the only guy on their team that can hit, and he just came back from an injury. I think you're bang on here. Like, I actually think that part of the reason that you see the number as friendly as it is, which is like
very friendly.
It's very friendly for the Jays. Yeah. Minus 157 on the money line, plus 105 on the run line. Like, I think the reason that you're seeing that is just straight up, well, are they going to sweep? Like, is that why we're seeing this? Like, are they going to sweep? I'm with you. I think this is a yes, yes, 1,000 times yes.
Yeah, that's the way I hate the baseball. The yes, yes, 1,000 times yes is so tough.
I know.
Because you sit down and you look at the numbers every game, and they always favor the better pitcher. And every once in a while, that better pitcher gets mad. Every once in a while, the Pirates sweep the Dodgers. And you're like, what the bleep just happened?
Yep.
But this was, like, I feel like there's some kind of urgency here with the Toronto Blue Jays. And I feel like they understand where the Yankees are. And I feel like they are so happy that the bats have woken up a little bit here. And they're starting to put together all of it. Now, it is the Royals, and I don't know if you can project that for the rest of, the next little while against these crappy teams that they got. But I definitely know that they're feeling themselves and that they know they've got to play crisp ball. And sometimes that's why you see a team lose to a crappy team, because they're out having a good time and they figure, listen, we're going to get a win here. This is lock and load it. And I don't think the Jays are playing like that right now. They were so pissed off, especially the hitters, when they went cold. You could see it in their faces. that they want to ride this streak as long as possible. And that's kind of why, like, I'm always scared. If you watch our show, I'm all like, this is 162. You're going to have ups and downs. You can't. Someone asked me if the Jays should sweep the Twins going into that series because they were shorthanded. I'm like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't just pencil in sweeps here. Like, no. This is baseball. But I'm going to pencil in a sweep
yes.
here, guys.
Let's go.
I am. I think they're ready. I think they've learned. And I think the Jays come out of this with Kikuchi over Singer.
I love it. Tim, usually we have, like, team bets. I think my best bet was also Jays on the money line. So if JD at least likes it, it's a team bet for the – no, I got a backup story. We let the guests go first, so I thought I have some backups in the back pocket. But a little team bet action. Actually, my best bet is going to come from the Jays game as well. I also liked the Jays over 4.5 runs, which is -127. They've done that consistently. Their bats are getting hot. But finally, on Unibet, you can bet our guy Kirk. They finally added him into the player props because you can't deny his hot streak. So I'm going to go with Kirk over 1.5 bases for plus money, +130. I really like that. Just for him to get a hit, it's very significantly not a good value, -250. So if you're looking for something over 1.5 bases, +130, that's my best bet for today.
Ailish is banking on him rounding first.
Yeah, he can make it. That's the tough one.
He's going to do it. He's looking good. He's got the all-star thing in the future. He's going to do it.
Listen, I do love watching him run. Like when somebody behind him gets a hit like Espinal yesterday and he's got a round third, like the width of that run, like the angle that he takes to hit that base is truly one of the joys of my sports viewing experience.
Or he just
right
hit the
now.
Bomb.
My very best bet tonight is very different. I'm going to the Nationals and the Marlins, which is I know. Nobody should be watching this game. This is just, I'm just throwing in a best bet for the people here. Nobody should watch this game. And I'm actually going against something I normally do. Normally I love a first five under because with an ace. I'm going on a first five over here because Sandy Alcantara is on the mound. He's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. He's one of the only guys that maybe you would make a case for ahead of Alec Manoah right now. And yet I'm going with the over because Washington actually has a pretty good track record against this guy. And the main guy that does is Juan Soto, who's taken him bridge a few times and is hitting 300 against him in 27 ABs. If I can just get one run, Washington Nationals in the first five, I think I'll crack this from you guys. Because if you look at Miami's batters, well, guess what? Over the last 16 games, they have the second best OPS against right-handed hitting in all of baseball. And they're facing Josiah Gray. The track record of against them, they got almost all of their roster. I'm talking about four different guys in their top five hitters hitting over 350 against this dude over his career. Smaller samples, but some are pretty decent, like 10 ABs, 11 ABs, 6 ABs. That's enough for me. So, yeah, I think that Miami runs up the score a little bit here through the first five that they get to Josiah Gray, and I just need that one to hit the over 3.5 runs in the first five innings of the Nationals and Marlins game. I believe. Just get to Sandy Alcantara for one, please. So, that is my best bet. That is today's Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Tim McAuliffe is on the Blue Jays that they get this done, that they get the sweep done. I believe in it, too. It's a team bet. Everyone agrees with Tim on this one. What a homer show this is. It was like the Toronto Blue Jays bet the home team to win in a sweep. Ailish Forfar doubling down on the homerism. Likes Alejandro Kirk to get over 1.5 bases. The guy's been a machine. He's basically Barry Bonds. And I am going with an over in the first five of the weirdest game ever, which is the Washington Nationals. Miami Marlins, don't watch it. Just look at the box score, and hopefully we win. Tim McAuliffe, thanks again for joining us, man. It's always fun to have you.
No problem. No, I'm being honest. When I first picked up, I thought it was Wake and Bake, not Wake and Rake, but whatever.
So whatever you want in the morning, we don't judge.
JD's sick. I heard the voice.
I'm battling. Today was my flu game. Thanks, Tim. We'll catch you later today. We'll be watching.
Be well, guys.
See you, man. That's Tim McAuliffe, host of Tim and Friends, which, of course, you can watch this afternoon. We will catch you tomorrow, hopefully healthy, in better health. It's JD Naylor, Sports at 590 The Fan.